Jack suddenly jolted awake. What had awakened him? His head was pounding, his heart was racing. The last thing he could remember was the Ville coming into sight, and feeling so, so tired. Jack raised himself on one elbow and took a look around. The first thing to strike him as weird was that he was lying down. How in the world had that happened without his realizing it? His eyes adjusted easily to the gloom, and he could see that the other companions were also in the room with him. There were two windows with thick hangings that kept out the light, apart from at the very edges where they weren't flush to the window frame. Through these gaps, Jack could see that it was probably late afternoon or early evening. The room itself was plastered and painted in a light color. In this half-light, Jack could see that the others, like himself, were in beds that were covered with blankets and quilts. Their weapons and supplies were by each bed, as though taken off individually and placed by the right bedside. He looked down. He was still fully dressed. He guessed that his friends were, too. The only other furniture in the room was a long wooden table, set against the far wall and bare, apart from a pitcher and six cups. It would seem that the companions had been lifted en masse from the horses when they had reached the Ville, then put to bed like children. Jack was curious as to why they had been afforded such care and respect. No one was that nice unless they expected something in return. But what? He couldn't shake the memory of the track forged by the Stickies, veering off away from the Ville. It had been such a little and stupid lie. There was a connection of some kind. But he was too tired to work it out right now. Jack stood, every muscle in his body aching as he did so. He could feel every last blow that he had taken during the battle with the Stickies, and was sure that the others would feel the same when they awoke. Tentatively, he walked toward the table, testing his strength. He was sore, but his limbs hadn't stiffened as he feared they might. He could tell that his speed was impaired. He reached the table and picked up the pitcher, sniffing at the contents. He could smell nothing but the faint aroma of the wood from which the pitcher was made. Jack dipped a finger into the clear liquid and then licked it. No taste other than what you'd expect from water. The faint coppery tang of earth, and perhaps a hint of metal from whatever piping had carried it to an outlet. Figuring it was safe to drink, or at least as safe as any untainted water could be, he poured some into one of the cups and drank deeply. His mouth felt as though someone had held a jolt party in there. It was so thick and dry. The water helped. Jack put down the cup and turned as he heard stirring from behind him. Ryan was starting to come around, looking around him and taking in his surroundings.
What the hell happened to us?
Guess I'm more tired than thought. Here, water.
Ryan got up from his bed and walked slowly to Jack, taking the cup from him and drinking deeply.
Thanks. So this is Pleasantville. I see they've left us all our stuff. Mighty nice of them. A bit too nice, don't you think?
Yeah. Triple red on that.
By this time, their lowered voices had penetrated the consciousness of the others, and they were all beginning to stir. Christy and JB were next up, and they shared Jack and Ryan's caution. Mildred pulled herself out of bed, but didn't immediately go to the others. She knelt beside Doc's bed and checked him.
Oh. Old Buzzard was hallucinating out there. Just want to see that he's okay.
Doc opened one eye.
My dear Dr. Wyeth, pray tell me what is hallucination and what is not. Whether or not 'tis there, does that make the emotion it evokes any less tangible?
Yeah, you're okay. Now get the hell up and drink something before you dehydrate.
When all six companions were up and clustered around the table, the door on the far side of the room opened, and Greyhorse stepped through. The tall, gaunt sec chief eyed them, then nodded.
So, you're all still here, and all awake. Good. Ethan wants to see you. Right now.
With some hesitation, the companions followed the sec chief, leaving their weapons and supplies by the sides of their beds. To attempt to retrieve any of them could be construed as hostile action, and until they knew what they were up against, it was best to maintain amiability. The sec party could easily have taken their weapons away while they'd been unconscious. It wasn't as if they were exactly unarmed now. They might not have their blasters, but Ryan still had the panga sheathed at his thigh and the scarf around his neck, a deadly weapon in experienced hands with the lead weight sewn into the ends that turned it into a bolo. Doc carried his sword stick with a silver lion's head, and JB was equipped with his Tecna hunting knife. As for Jack, it was unlikely anyone could have found all the leaf-bladed throwing knives hidden on his person. So, if Ethan, Baron of Pleasantville, and his sec chief trusted them enough not to do a body search, to take away Jack's jacket and Doc's cane, and to leave their weapons by their bedsides, then why should they feel any suspicion? Their instincts were telling them that people in the Deathlands, particularly Barons, were never this friendly without an ulterior motive. Greyhorse led them along a maze of corridors lined with windows that showed that they were moving through more than one building. Some of the old suburban sprawl of houses that constituted part of Pleasantville had been joined together by stucco and brick corridors that made several houses and shacks into one single building. It would be possible to travel almost an entire circuit of the ville without actually setting foot outside. It would also make finding your way around more difficult if you weren't familiar with the ville. This was something that always set alarm bells ringing loudly in Ryan's head.
Why does Ethan want to see us?
It was the first time any of them had spoken since leaving their dormitory, and Ryan's voice sounded unnaturally loud in the quiet corridor. They had passed no one on their journey, and although they could see people outside and through the windows of other buildings, it was almost as though they had been purposely isolated from the ville inhabitants until they had seen the Baron. The sec chief seemed to take a long time to answer, leading them through another corridor, not looking back. For a moment, Ryan thought that the man hadn't heard his question, and started to speak again. But Greyhorse finally broke the silence, looking back over his shoulder.
Ethan just wants to get to know you better. See where you're from, where you reckon to be going. That's not a problem, is it?
Ryan looked over his shoulder at Christy. She was his barometer of mood. Her Titian mane was flowing, not tight and coiled, but there was some agitated movement from the strands around her neck. She noticed Ryan staring at her and gave him a puzzled look. Her perception of imminent danger was so slight that she wasn't aware of it herself.
No, it's not a problem. Not unless you want it to be.
So there may be no problem right now, but it was a time to be cautious. He could tell from his brief glimpse of the others that they felt entirely the same way, without needing to be told. Finally, they seemed to reach the end of their journey. The corridors, which had been sparse up to now, were becoming more ornately decorated. Animal heads mounted on wood, paintings that looked both new and scavenged from pre-dark times, and tapestries of bright colors were hung from the walls with some thought to their placement. That little fact alone gave Ryan a clue as to the man they were about to see. A pair of modest but tellingly clean white-painted double doors marked the end of the corridor. Greyhorse stopped in front of them and knocked twice, standing back to wait for a response.
Enter!
They followed Greyhorse into the baronial chamber. Like the corridors outside, it was decorated in a combination of paintings, animal heads, and tapestries, tastefully arranged against a brilliant white wall. The floor was polished wood, shiny and slippery underfoot. The furnishings were sparse but comfortable. Two sofas and three high chairs, covered in a multicolor tapestry material that matched some of those on the walls. Two long tables against the walls, with books and papers neatly arranged on top, along with a wooden bowl of fruit and a pitcher, presumably of water, and an old mid-20th century desk in a dark wood, restored to its original sheen. Behind the desk was a late 20th century swivel chair, carefully restored with animal hide, dyed to resemble the original black leather or PVC covering. Ethan was standing behind the desk, leaning forward and supporting himself on his knuckles, resting lightly while he perused a document on the desktop. Behind him, a window framed him in a halo of exterior light. Whether this effect was intentional or not, it was dramatic. Ethan looked up, folding the document so that its contents would be concealed, and moved around his desk to stride across the room to Ryan, taking the one-eyed man's hand and forearm in his own and grasping them firmly.
Ah, good. You are, I trust, well rested after the rigors of yesterday?
It was nice of you to look after us.
Oh, not at all, not at all. It was my pleasure, I assure you. As you may recall, I described you as interesting, and that opinion hasn't changed in the slightest. You fascinate me, and if you wish, you can look on my hospitality as a way of satisfying my curiosity. Now come, sit down.
Ethan led Ryan toward the sitting area, Greyhorse indicating to the other companions that they should follow. They sat, following Ryan's lead, as he and Ethan reached the sofas. They were soft and yielding. When they were settled, the Baron lifted one of the high chairs and placed it so that he was positioned in the middle of the two sofas, able to see all parties. He sat, leaning forward with one elbow on his knee, fist under his chin, the very model of attentiveness.
You can go, Grey Horse. I'll summon you when I need you.
The dreadlocked Sekhmos nodded and withdrew, closing the doors behind him.
So, I'm thinking that you have a tale to tell. You see, we have regular patrols around the territory, as we have to protect the trade routes to and from this ville. We have a thriving economy, and we live better than many baronies. But vigilance is the price we pay. You get my drift?
I'm not sure I do.
Ryan was aware of what Ethan was saying, but wanted the Baron to come out with it himself. Unfortunately, Doc still wasn't as sharp as at his best, and took Ryan's words at face value.
My dear boy, I feel sure that our kind host here means to ascertain how we came to be in his lands without having passed any of his patrols.
Ethan smiled, noting the flicker of exasperation that crossed Ryan's face.
Precisely. I've never known anyone to get past our lines without warning.
What about Stickies?
We didn't think they'd be a problem. Just pass through and then go without even bothering us. Whatever stirred them up, it's an error we won't make again.
It was a plausible enough explanation.
Point is, we knew about them. We didn't know you were here until we stumbled on you and damn near chilled you along with the Stickies. Now, how did that happen?
To tell you the truth, we don't really know. We came from the northeast across the dry plain. We should have been visible enough.
He would let Ethan work it out from there. He wasn't going to explain anything beyond that.
My people avoid the plain. Nothing can really live there, and I'm mightily impressed that you got across it. But we circle it with our patrols, and we should have sighted you before you hit there. It's not that big a place, and there's nothing to conceal you if you're observed from the surrounding territory. My guess is that you're not telling me the whole story, eh?
Well, my guess is that maybe some of your patrols aren't as thorough as you'd like, or not as observant.
The Baron gave Ryan a cold, hard stare that was difficult to read.